when you really drill down on the importance of employee engagement, that's where you see their dollars are directly going to these candidates to help them in their reelection efforts. Our dollars represent about a third of the total dollars that are given directly to campaign committees.
I'm Eric Wilson, managing partner of Startup Caucus, an investment fund and incubator for Republican campaign technology. Welcome to the Business of Politics podcast. On this show, we bring you into conversation with the entrepreneurs who build best-in-class political businesses, the funders who provide the capital, and the operatives who put it all together to win campaigns. We're speaking with Michaela Isler on today's episode. Michaela is the executive director of the National Association of Business Political Action Committees, more commonly known as NABPAC. It's a nonprofit trade association for PACs with a membership of more than 700 PAC and government affairs professionals. In this episode, we talk about the role that employee-funded and business trade association PACs play in the political process and how that's changed significantly in recent cycles. I hope you enjoy it. Michaela, I think our audience will appreciate having some terms defined right up front. So what is a business PAC and how does it relate to super PACs and dark money?
Sure. Well, first, thank you, Eric, for having me on your podcast today. Thrilled to be with you. And I've been saying for probably the last year and a half that we are on a mission here at NABPAC to set the record straight on the facts about PACs. And there's so much misinformation out there around our PACs, I think in large part because most folks refer to us as corporate PACs and that immediately folks think that that means that the corporations are funding these PACs. And the reality is that the money is not coming out of the corporate treasury funds. It is truly coming from individual small dollar donations from eligible employees or member organizations for our business trade associations to give to candidates. The way this differs from super PACs is, as many may know, that as a result in 2010 of Supreme Court case Citizens United, super PACs did come on the scene, and they are essentially an independent expenditure only committee. So they are not able to directly give to candidates for federal office. And these independent expenditures do expressly advocate for the election or defeat of identified federal candidates, but they are not coordinated with any of the candidates, the candidate committees, party committees, or any of their agents. The difference with super PACs, though, is that they can accept money in unlimited amounts from unions, corporations, and any unaffiliated individuals, and as well as from nonprofit organizations who do not have to report the sources of their funding. So where on the employee-funded PAC side, we can only solicit a certain number of employees within an organization. The amount of money that they can give is extremely limited at $5,000 a year, and it's a lot harder to raise that kind of money.
Right. And so the dark money label that a lot of people hear, which doesn't really have a clear definition because that's not a legal term, but typically refers to money that's not disclosed, right? So things like C4s or C3s, where you don't know who's contributing the money for those organizations. In the case of these corporate PACs, we do know who's giving to that PAC. So I think that's another really important distinction. And I really appreciate you kind of spelling that out because it's kind of a politicized vocabulary right now.
Absolutely. And one of the things we talk about a lot, because our PACs are so transparent, every penny in the door and every penny out of the door is reported to the Federal Election Commission. The compliance side of our business is taken very seriously. We have very close relations with our analysts at the Federal Election Commission, especially if you're a PAC giving at the state and federal level. There's just a lot to consider as you go to make those contributions, whether there's the varying limits across the states. And then they report on a monthly basis for the most part. Some election year report quarterly, but the vast majority of the employee-funded PACs are reporting into the Federal Election Commission on a monthly basis. And then before primary or general elections are reporting even more frequently. And so there is no question about where the money is coming from and where the money is going, unlike the 501c4 and independent expenditure accounts that you talk about as so-called dark money.
Now, give our listeners, Michaela, a sense of the scale of the PAC ecosystem. How many PACs are there and how much do they contribute in a typical election cycle?
So at the end of the 2020 election cycle, there were roughly 7,800 PACs and super PACs registered with the Federal Election Commission and really representing every interest imaginable. But of the total number of PACs, less than one third, so about 2,600, are funded by corporate employees or trade association members. And this includes 1,600 corporate employee funded PACs, 713 trade association PACs, 216 membership PACs, and then about 88 PACs of corporations without shareholders. So in the 2020 election cycle, this represented only about 5% of all of the total money spent on the election. So when you're looking at the big picture of the amount of dollars that flowed into the elections in 2020, these dollars were a very small percentage, about 5%.
Got it. But for the vast majority of members of Congress, these corporate PAC contributions represent an important source of funding for their campaigns, correct?
Absolutely. And that's the big distinguisher, because when we talk about super PACs and 501c money and independent expenditures, those dollars cannot be used to send directly to the campaign committee, where our dollars can. And that's where the candidate can use those dollars to get out their messages, go up on TV, all the things they need to do to run their campaign, pay their staff, marketing, all that. And so that's where, when you really drill down on the importance of employee engagement, that's where you see their dollars are directly going to these candidates to help them in their reelection efforts. Our dollars represent about a third of the total dollars that are given directly to campaign committees.
Wow.
So significant.
Yeah. And particularly important, I think, for candidates and elected officials in poorer districts around the country, right, where they're not able to necessarily fundraise for the resources locally, but are able to help fund their campaigns with the help of your members.
Yes, certainly. I think you bring up a good point, because with the onset of WinRed and Act Blue, certainly seeing a very large increase in individual dollars coming into campaigns. And we've seen the headlines with the AOCs of the world. And that is certainly changing the dynamics. But not everyone is going to be an AOC, and not everyone's going to have that staying power. And, you know, they may have a really successful quarter, depending on the issues of the day. But I think the business PAC community has been around since the creation of PACs in the 1970s, and we're not going anywhere, quite frankly. And so we're a consistent group that has been a part of our public discourse for over 40 years and are going to continue that. And so you still see a lot of interest from our employees. This is a way for them to express their engagement in our political process. And through some data that we've been tracking over the last several election cycles, we know that employees really value their organization, their corporation's viewpoints, being a moderator in our public policy discourse, being able to bring the issues of importance to them as an employee, a member of the communities from which they work, to have a say in the political process over any other entity, whether it's a political party, a labor union, you know, any other group out there. The employer really has a very trusted viewpoint in communicating the importance of these issues and civic engagement with their employees.
And so, Michaela, we see clearly the benefits to elected officials and the candidates, right? They're getting money to fund their campaigns and hopefully get elected. What do the businesses and their employees get from these PACs and advocacy efforts?
This is an opportunity for them to develop relationships with key members of Congress, federal level, and at the state level, if they're engaged at the state level, if their business operations are regulated at the state level as well. And honestly, this is an opportunity to build that trust and to create an open dialogue. Those of us that have been in politics for a long time know that any number of issues come across the desk of an elected official every election cycle, and they and their staff are not going to be experts on every single issue. And so for an organization to be able to go in and provide trusted, verifiable data, information on any particular issue that may impact either their organization or their industry is incredibly valuable. And so having an ability to reach as many elected officials on those issues of importance to the organization is incredibly valuable. And if it wasn't, they wouldn't be in the business, right? So, I mean, I love the topic of your podcast, because we do talk a lot about, as PAC managers and PAC professionals, that we really are running a small business. And there is a lot to consider, and obviously from a legal and compliance perspective, but also understanding the issues of importance to your company, to your industry, industry, how it impacts the communities, your consumers, your employees is important.
I'm joined today by Michaela Isler, who is the executive director of NABPAC, the National Association of Business Political Action Committees, which is a trade association of PACs. I'd like to joke that there is a trade association for everything in Washington, D.C., and PACs are no exception. So, Michaela, I want to dive into this argument for a moment, and I'll do my best to make it, even though I don't agree with it, which says that corporate money unduly influences politicians and elected officials, and it dilutes the abilities of individuals to drive change. Now, if we press that a little bit further, the corporate contributions are also one of the main advantages of incumbency, which makes it difficult for challengers to take on career politicians. Why should corporations and their employees specifically, now that we understand the distinction there, be allowed to have these PACs and encourage their employees to give and contribute to members of Congress?
I think that's a great question. And I think at its core, Eric, this issue is honestly really about the idea of inclusivity. You know, why should employees of businesses or trade groups be excluded from the political process? The people who are trying to get rid of PACs really aren't saying get all the money out of politics. They're not saying people shouldn't be able to pool their money together because they're okay with labor unions and other affinity groups having PACs and donating to their campaigns. They're specifically targeting business and business association PACs. And I think one has to question why. Why should employees of businesses be excluded? And so here at NABPAC, we believe that we have a free and open society, and business PACs are some of the most highly regulated and transparent ways for citizens to support and educate their elected officials. And I guess a representative democracy really only works if our representatives can hear from all of our citizens, right? And so for me personally, I find it chilling to listen to some officials say that these voices of their constituents don't matter because of where they work.
Right. That's a really good reframing of it, I think, because, you know, there are some people saying we want to get money completely out of politics, but that's not realistic. And I can say this, I think, which is there are certain partisan elements who want to put allies of one side on the sidelines by banning these organizations and trying to do so by conflating undisclosed money, unlimited contributions with the type of contributions that your member PACs make. And so as our listeners no doubt no, there's been this pledge going around among candidates, primarily on the left, about not taking money from corporate PACs. And it's been gaining momentum in recent years. I think back to the 2020 presidential primary on the Democratic side, there were several candidates who did not accept what they called corporate contributions, by which they mean corporate PACs. And then after the January 6th attack on the Capitol, there were a number of corporations that either decided to end their PACs altogether, pause those contributions, or restrict giving to the election objectors. So walk us through from your perspective, what impact has this had on election funding and your members' ability to influence legislation in the last several months?
Actually, the data does not bear out that we have seen very many employee-funded PACs shut down since January 6th. We're only aware of one very public organization that shut down their PAC, but the data that we have and that we've pulled our members on very clearly showcases that our members definitely took a step back to ensure that they had the proper governance in place, a strong board of directors. They walked their employees and their board of directors through how, as a PAC, they make decisions on who they give to. There was a lot of educating for their employees and member companies to understand truly just the process and the reason why their PAC exists in the first place. And many of our PACs had town halls. They had employee focus groups, one-on-one conversations, several PAC board of director meetings, and really wanted to ensure that the processes that they had in place were sound and that they could move forward with. Many of our member organizations felt after that entire process of, you know, 3 or 4 months, it took some time to take the step back and really review all of their internal procedures and policies. Some of them, their boards felt like they had a very strong governance process in place and didn't need to make changes. And others did. Others added value statements, contribution criteria that went a little bit further than normal. Many, about 67% of our members, did pause giving in the first quarter to do all of those things, to be thoughtful and to be sure that they were in a really sound place before they began making contributions again. And most of our member organizations felt like they could complete that within the first quarter and would likely begin giving again at some point in the second quarter. That doesn't mean they were going to be giving to maybe the same people that they've given to in the past, but that they were ready to engage once again. And the one thing that we've learned over the last several months, there's obviously a lot of research out there, political research around the business engagement in our political process and being a moderating force in our public discourse. And we do believe that while the attack on January 6th was horrific, that we do need to continue to engage, that we need more voices at the table, especially in this very polarizing environment. And there are a lot of issues moving in Congress, and our members need to be engaged for their employees and for their consumers and for their companies. So I think we're going to continue to see for sure. I think it's going to be a much more fluid process. You create a budget at the beginning of a cycle, and it's not uncommon to go back and review maybe who you decided that you were going to give to at the beginning of the cycle, and then maybe have a review of that midpoint through the cycle. I think we're going to see a more fluid process of evaluation. I do think there's going to be a lot more interest in some of the rhetoric that various elected officials may be on record saying, and that will likely have an impact on where these organizations put their dollars. But it is, as I've said at the outset, it's a transparent, regulated, and highly accountable process. And they're going to move forward in the best way that they can.
Obviously, this is a very tragic situation. We're still seeing the effects of it months later, what happened at the Capitol on January 6th. But I'm glad to see that it's created a revival of interest and civic engagement in some of these corporations with their PACs, and, you know, looking at making giving priorities that aren't just about the bottom line, for example, and considering other factors when making those decisions. So if there is a silver lining at all, it sounds like that's where it is.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I've been saying that since the beginning. I think the pause was prudent. It's always good to take a step back and reassess. Much like after 9/11, you know, we had to take this moment and do that. And so I'm proud of our members taking that time, having those difficult conversations with employees. And in the end, I think we're all going to be better for it.
Michaela, let's suppose for a minute and explore the counterfactual of, you know, let's say these efforts to limit corporate PACs and employee contributions are successful. Does that money leave politics? And what do the companies do to affect outcomes on the Hill?
That is a very big concern for us here at NAPAC. I think there are a lot of unintended consequences of potentially eliminating employee-funded PACs. We've talked a little bit about this already, but a reduction in employee-funded PAC contributions, we believe, will result really in more political polarization. And this really comes out of some of that data from Brigham Young that was conducted by Michael Barber, who's a political scientist there at BYU. We've had him on our Facts About PACs podcast, and really looking at fundraising data and voting patterns across really all 50 states. And it's clear that if you remove the business voice from this equation, that you are going to see this sort of uprising and more extremes on both sides, you know, sort of the far right and far left having a stronger voice in the process. So I would caution, you know, anyone from saying employee funded PACs are the boogeymen, because we aren't. We really aren't. But we do think that organizations and employees, they're going to have to find a way to engage and participate in the political process. And I think that only means potentially through less accountable, less transparent ways were you to get rid of employee funded PACs. And I just think the citizen participation that our PACs have really nurtured over these 45 years and really encouraging employees to engage in the process has been a major part of what we do. It's not just about raising money for PACs. It's really and truly this nonpartisan, get out the vote. Here's your polling location. Here's how you get registered to vote. We may even put together scorecards on pro-business viewpoint, but truly being able to engage our employees to get out and vote, I think will be constrained going forward. And I do think that we'll see a continued increase in this sort of political influence and power concentrated in sort of a smaller group of wealthy individuals, and only those that have the millions of dollars to spend to run a campaign for office are going to be the ones that can emerge as our candidates. And they may or may not be the right folks that we want representing us in Washington. My fear is that this as the most, and I can't say it enough, most transparent, accountable way of participating in the process. You get rid of that and it starts to move into the darker space. And I think we really encourage that not to be the case.
Yeah. And it looks like some of the momentum there has stalled out for the time being. And Michaela, one thing I like to say to people who say, oh, there's too much money in politics. You know, if you want to get money out of politics, get politics out of money, right? Because as long as there are issues being discussed that are important to the bottom line for businesses and trade associations, they're going to try and affect those outcomes. With that, I want to thank you, Michaela, for joining us today for this very timely conversation. The Business PAC community obviously plays a huge role in funding elections at the state and federal level. And so, of course, we need to talk to you for the Business of Politics podcast. You can listen to Michaela's podcast, The Facts About PACs, and find more about their work at nabpac.org. Remember to subscribe to the Business of Politics show wherever you listen to podcasts. And I would ask you to share this episode with a friend if it made you smarter today. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.